The following is a presentation of the Premier Dance Network.
I'm James, and this is The Stage Right Side with James Whiteside, where we'll dive deep into the dark world of dance and come up on the bright side. Oh, that's terrible. Welcome back to The Stage Right Side. This is your host, James Whiteside, and I'm here with my guest, Mark Morris.
Yay,
all that jazz. So I'm going to dive right in because we have limited time. Why do you make dances?
Why do I make dances? It's my only skill, and I make dances because of the existence of music, and that's kind of it. I used to lie and say that I had to choose between orthodontia and dancing lessons, and obviously I didn't get orthodontia, so my mother hated when I said that. I was dancing before I learned how to walk. Everybody always does that story, and I was drawn to dancing at about 8 or 9, and I was a Spanish dancer first before I spread out and did a whole bunch of other things.
Do you speak Spanish?
I do speak Spanish enough. Mm-hmm. If I'm in Madrid for a day, I'm pretty good, but I can be a week in Puerto Rico and not be very good. I speak Castellano as needed. Anyway, I speak French better, but that's another story. So, anyhow, I just kept dancing. I was making up dances when I was 7, and I didn't know what I was doing. Still don't. Enforcing neighborhood kids to do it, of course.
Naturally,
yeah. One does that.
Queens do.
Yeah, and I was sometimes the featured artist. or I would dance in front of the TV, so my parents had to watch me instead of the Lawrence Welk show. But anyway, so it wasn't just a showing off thing. There was always music in my house. I sang all the time. I play the piano very rudimentarily. But the music thing for me, as old-fashioned as that may be, is the whole reason that I do any of it.
So that being said,
so I consider myself a musician who works in the medium of dance.
Okay. So that being said, how do you feel about dance in silence? There's so many pieces.
Hooray.
In silence. Yeah.
Hooray. I did one myself.
I did it
as an experiment to see if I could kick my addiction to music. Because I just detest so many people use music as background or as a track, like in a movie or something, which is fine. And you can do whatever the hell you want. But I made up a dance when I was in Brussels in the late 80s, early 90s. I said, I will not use the crutch of music. It's not a crutch of any kind. Let me see. I was a big worshiper of Merce Cunningham. Of course, Merce and John were fully musical. It was just another approach. It wasn't anti-musical at all. And so I made up a dance with no score, with no musical involvement of any kind. And I just started, usually I have a score in hand, as it always says. Yeah. Mark Morris pictured score in hand. It's like upside down half the time. I'm bullshitting.
It's a kid's book.
That's right. It's like, yeah. It's like, so I do that, but it's also, I can look at a score while I'm thinking and the pressure's off from everybody in the room waiting for me to come up with something. So without that, it was like, okay, what do I do? And I just started making stuff up. The same rules, the same structures as a piece of music. That's how I work anyway.
Pretending that there was music?
No, not at all. But formally, there were sounds, of course, walking and, clapping and just the sounds that people make. And so I thought, I'll never do this. And like a couple weeks later, I had an hour's worth of material, as we choreographers call moves.
Yep.
So it was like, nice. How do you remember all those moves? And so, I always thought that about Merce's company, my friends in Merce's company. I was like, how do you know what to do next?
Yeah.
It's crazy. And it's a thing that dancers know, that other people, it's mysterious, but that's all you need to know is the next thing. And so I ended up with this dance, and I cut and pasted and built a dance that ended up being 45 minutes long, no score, and I called it, because it was a big monster of a dance, Behemoth. And I made it up, and I still love it. We do it periodically, but that was the one experiment in that.
You don't want to try it again?
I could. I work on stuff without music and then put it into... I don't like count and analyze and structure everything exactly according to a score, which is what people accuse me of so what? Like, because their worst crimes.
Music,
yeah, thank you. Sorry. Yeah. And I have good taste in music, and I work with great musicians, and my dancers are great musicians. So, as all really good dancers are, even if you're not dancing to music, you know, Trisha's early work without music it's gorgeous. Lucinda, the genius Lucinda Childs, revived some very early pieces recently at the Joyce, and I worship her. But I was like, oh my God, where have those dances been? They're so satisfying and so wonderful. But, you know, very notoriously, and I'm no names here, but notoriously, ballet industry orchestras are often not rehearsed enough or not good enough or not whatever. So, like, the first ballet commissions I did were early, I worked a lot with San Francisco Ballet, I only used chamber music because I didn't trust that the orchestra would have rehearsed or known the piece. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's not always their fault. If you have a huge repertory, like New York City Ballet, and the band is very often not up to it because they're playing really, really hard music with not enough rehearsal, just like the dancers are putting on shows without enough rehearsal and bearing the brunt of all criticism and ire.
Well, you know, we do mediocre really well.
Well, that's the thing. That's the drive in our national culture.
Yeah.
No bumps, nothing too good or too bad, just right.
Do you remember when you used to buy a vacuum for life?
What?
You used to buy a vacuum for life.
Yes, that's
right. I
want
to do a dance for life. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We'll get there. We'll get there. The Electrolux, like, technician. You know?
Well, you know, my keyboard on my iPad just exactly wore out on... It now doesn't work.
You just put it in the trash.
It just stopped.
It's garbage now.
But what did I do besides spending money on it and hardly ever typing? Now I can't even do that. So anyway.
Okay, the next topic I'd like to cover is...
Am I rushing because I got here so late and I'm so ashamed?
I love the speed with which you talk.
Okay.
You're nailing it.
I don't do very much.
Which is good.
Okay.
Me either. So tell me about your relationship to New York City and why you're still here.
That's a very good question. A sound that I hate more than the sound of unwrapping little candies in slow motion in the theater... is the sound of clipping fingernails. Even if I do it myself, I'm like, ah, I hate it. I hate it. My company knows I can hear it through walls a mile away. It's like, who's doing that?
Your dog whistle.
It is horrible. So I was in a horrible traffic. It's New York. There's no other kind. And there's no rush hour. It's all the time. And this driver, at every stop sign, he would stop and start clipping his nails. I don't know how many. He had like 35 fingernails. And I was losing my mind on the way here. And then, but I have to tell you, I'm here. It was fine. It was a nightmare. And it still continues to be. But what happened to me just recently, my building, I have a studio, Mark Morris Dance Center, or as young people call it, Mark Morris. So I hear people, you know, on the subway, I never take the subway, but you hear somebody saying, oh God, on their phone, like, oh God, I have another stupid, boring rehearsal at Mark Morris. It's like, excuse me, it's like who's buried in Grant's tomb, kind of. So anyway, oh hi, I'm Mark Morris. No, that's a building. It's like, okay, well, I am an edifice in a certain way. But, you know, I have this wonderful place in Fort Greene in Brooklyn, and I work there. I live in Manhattan, and there's more construction there than there is any... It's like Singapore or something.
Well, Manhattan's done
at
this point.
Unbelievable.
You know?
Yeah.
It is Singapore. You're going to have a surfboard with a pool on top of your studio soon.
Yeah.
It's going to be very chic and very expensive.
Yeah.
But we can't afford it, though.
Oh, no. None of my dancers can live near the building. I can't. You know, and I have a beautiful... with 7, soon to be 10 studios, a very successful school, a big program for people who have Parkinson's disease. Every choreographer in town loves it when I'm on tour because they get to use my big, beautiful studio. So it's a dream. However, thinking about it, I moved here in 1976. Excuse me.
That's before.
Yeah. It's before time. But, you know, and I love it here, of course. I travel enough that I like coming back, and I'm here enough that I'm dying to get out of town. But I have to tell you, talking with an old friend of mine the other day who grew up here, if I had to move to New York now, I wouldn't.
Why?
Because of the exact same... First of all, the homogenization. You know, it's just like every other town. You know, London is now just like New York, which means it got better. But it's also New York. You know, I love that there are fewer murders. A whole bunch of things, but... everybody misses something from the past, and I'm not nostalgic, but It's a pain in the ass. Living here is a real pain in the ass, I have to say. It's just, it's too noisy, and it's a bunch of things that happen when you get older, but also when the city gets so packed and so touristy, and, you know, it's fine, it's good. However, it's annoying.
And what would you attribute that to? I know. It's annoying, I love it. It's like when something's really gross or tastes strange, you're like, try it.
Yeah.
But
right here, smell my finger. That's what it's like. Okay, what? Oh.
I don't know.
I love New York. Get me out of here.
So where to?
Oh, Seville.
Seville.
Sevilla.
That is surprising.
I like it.
Yeah.
I go every couple years for the last 20 or so years to India. And I really, really like it. But I don't want to live there. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like the smallest city in India is like 50 million people.
Insane.
So it's like, maybe not. But I love it. I love South Asia. I go there a lot, Indonesia and in India. And I'm not a religious tourist at all. That's why I have so many friends in India, because I'm not seeking enlightenment. I just like it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, but I'm not going anywhere. I'm here. And I have enough friends who have houses outside of town that anytime I want, I can just go upstate or out there. And I never do.
Yeah.
I stay, if I have a week off, I stay in my apartment and complain. And if I have a few weeks off, I go away somewhere. Or, you know, we travel so much on tour. We travel more than you guys do.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Because you're like 600 people, and you just to get on the bus takes a week. And I'm usually around 20 dancers and, this, you know, 10 musicians or something. So we're convenient to travel, but it's still, you know.
What's the last place you went to?
We were just in the state of California. On the west coast
That's
of
civilized.
The United States. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We just did one show each in Santa Barbara and San Diego. And then I was a week in San Francisco schmoozing and getting physical therapy. And, you know, it was wonderful. Just
money
to be out
and
of
therapy.
Town.
That sounds civilized.
I know, right? Isn't that good?
We all need those things.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about a little bit how your work has evolved from when you first started making dances. Tell me about your early work as far as what your goal was in the dance.
Goal was, do this.
Yeah.
The goal was, wow, what if you could do that? And that's what I did. It's like, here's some music I love. I can't not dance to it.
Mm-hmm.
So really, this sounds really stupid, but I wasn't fully conscious of the term choreography or choreographer, or I didn't know if I was doing modern dance, whatever that
what
is,
do you call
or
it?
Whatever.
Would
dance.
You say,
I make up dances.
Okay, yeah, good.
I make up dances. And I'm good at it. I teach, I direct operas, I coach musicians, I conduct a little bit. You know, I'm really, you know, I have a music life. And, you know, I have genius dancers, but, you know, in the earliest days of me making up dances, it was, you know, my first really good dance I made up when I was, I think, 16. And it would still hold water today.
That's cool.
And it was, you know, it was like, oh, okay. And I had just started studying, seriously, I'd studied Spanish dance, ballet. I was a folk dancer, Balkan folk dancer, and added various flavors of modern dance training. I had a sort of a smattering of I didn't go to conservatory. I didn't do that. I went to dancing school. And I moved to New York and got jobs right away because I was good.
How old were you when you moved to New York City?
Well, I was born in 1956. I was 19 when I moved to New York, just before I turned 20.
Did you behave yourself when you moved to New York City?
What does that mean?
I don't know. Were you focused solely on making dances right away? Or?
No, I was trying to get into a company. My dream at the time was to dance with the Joffrey Ballet. And then I got here. It's like, no. my first professional job was dancing with what was then called the Elliotfeld Ballet. And Elliot's an old crazy friend of mine, you know. And so I danced with several companies for a year and a half or 2 years. I danced with Hannah Kahn, who's a marvelous choreographer who lives in Colorado. I danced with Laura Lubavitch. I danced with Laura Dean, which was wonderful and weird. And I was also doing State Department tours when they used to take people all over the world. They do it a little tiny bit now, but nothing like it was. We'd go on 11 weeks in Central and South America.
Wow.
9 weeks in Asia. So it was like, it was a, because I loved it. And now I travel for pleasure, but mostly for work. I came out as queer when I was 17 and living in Spain briefly. I wanted to be a flamenco and live in Spain. And, you know, I wrote home like, I'm gay, and my mother was like, you know, kind of the equivalent of duh. you know, or, you know, of course we love you. And it's just, she was only concerned that it would make my life harder to be a queer. Yeah. And of course, Franco was the generalissimo in Spain. So it was against the law. And I had close friends who were arrested for ready public effeminacy. This is 1972 or 3 or something. I was like, what? You know, and I was a sissy, but, you know, I'm not like, you know, I wasn't a girl, and I wasn't super femmy, but I was distinctly queer, and, you know.
Other.
And it was wonderful. It was wonderful. And so, you know, my battles on queerness were taken care of in the early 80s, when I was just becoming known as a choreographer, and a lot of who I knew were queer choreographers were, you know, straight acting and appearing in the sort of Lincoln Kirsten model of we're not gay because it's against the law. That's why we have the secret code and the bars and, you know, so that sort of development. I never imagined gay marriage. I'm also opposed to marriage of any kind. So it's like, okay, hooray for everybody, and I can take it easy. That battle has been won, and you can thank me, young gay people, for my the strides that I made, you know. Whatever. I'm not a hero, but I'm tired.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah, how do you...
Did I answer your question?
I don't know. It doesn't matter,
all right,
because
good.
I'm fascinated.
Okay.
How do you feel about the behavior and presentation of young queer people in today's very modern technological world? Are you appalled? Are you inspired? Are you disgusted? Tell me everything.
Sure.
All of them?
Yeah. I maintain that you can do whatever the heck you want. Don't kill anybody. So I'm against guns. You know, I find pornography to me is violence. Guns and violence. And of course, rape goes into that. But pornography to me is not genital or sexual. That's not offensive in any way to me. I don't have to watch it or participate in it. Leave me alone. I disagree with you, but fine. You know, I really live and let live. You know, I've known transgender people since I was, you know, 13 or 14, in the same way that my family, my very close family, is part African American, and, you know, it goes way back. So, I grew up in Seattle, which was very multicultural, a word I hate, and that wasn't even a word then. So, hooray. I think also every young person thinks that he or she or they is very... I have a problem with that, with the grammatics of they is. Mm-hmm. I just, you know, whatever, I'll call you whatever you want. And I've been in a couple meetings where they go around and say your preferred gender pronoun, and I said, you call me whatever the hell you want. It is fine. Really, I don't mind. Whatever you need, it's fine with me. So, but the thing is, like all young people, queer or non-queer, I don't know, whatever that is, everyone thinks that no one has ever felt as deeply as they do. So that's the charming thing about, like, somebody first putting on a show or your first poem or whatever. It's, like, so narcissistic that you can't imagine. You know, it's like, I have the deepest feelings of anyone in the world. And you're right. You do. And so does everybody else. Yeah. That's the thing. It's like, here's the evening-length solo that I wrote the music for, made the costumes. I'm sorry, is this doing too close to something?
Oh, it's really deeply
related. The 7 people who are my best friends are in the audience because they also helped build the set and and put up the flyers online. And the piece is about me coming out as whatever it is you're coming out as. And it's so heartfelt and so deep and so satisfying and often just boring as hell. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay. And so I used to say, this is a terrible thing to say, I used to say, okay, you're gay, what are your other skills? Is there anything else you can do?
Nope, that's it.
That's it.
That's,
well, hooray, congratulations.
Well, so, I've got that down.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, all right, okay, here's the employment form. Check one, gay, done. It's like, okay, hooray, I can't not hire you. You know, it's like, I don't know. I don't think it's that special, but since everybody's special and everyone's a beautiful you know, gem.
Unicorn,
in, yeah, exactly. Thank you. Yeah, everybody's My Little Pony in some way. So, you know, hooray. And I like, you know, tolerance is an insulting word to me. It's like, fuck you. What do you mean you tolerate that I'm whatever, atheist or queer or old or whatever? You don't get to tolerate. It's like, you tolerate the pain in your knee when you had the MRI that I had a little while ago. I thought I was going to die of panic and I was fine.
So wait, it's like, it was on your knee? Did you have to go all the way?
No, just up to my shoulders. But I took like a fistful of Valiums.
Yeah. Those are harrowing. Those
and it was just fine. They were so, I was like, that's it? What's the matter? Anyway, I'm fine, by the way.
What's wrong with you?
I don't know yet. The MRI isn't back. It's my knee. You know, I have a 61-year-old knee.
Yeah, that's been around.
Yeah, and the x-ray's perfectly clear. So, whatever.
Witchcraft.
Something. Yeah, who knows? And I'm fine, because I don't perform that much, but I also don't want to hurt very much. Mm-hmm. I've been very lucky with sort of injuries and stuff. But, yeah, it's also like, I also think, like, queer-wise, it's like, big deal. That's my personal thing. It's like, okay, fine.
Yeah, of course.
I don't want to be so careful about what I have to call everybody, and but I will. I'll follow those rules while they're around, because they'll change also.
Mm-hmm. Certainly is difficult to keep up.
Well, I was just reading about that guy in the English National Ballet.
Me too, I read that.
Yeah, just, I was reading that and like, you know, War and Peace in my cab ride. I was like, okay, right on, I guess. Hooray.
I mean,
wonderful. I'm fine.
Yes,
so
me
what?
Too.
Yeah.
So what? Moving right along. Next.
Yeah. Right.
What do you?
It's not like ballet was never sissy.
I know what I mean. Truly.
The first time I and everyone in the world saw a ballet with men in white tights, I was like, I had to avert my gaze. GAZE.
Yeah.
Like what?
And I
it's
have binoculars.
It's worse than naked. That's right.
I was like, give me the binoculars.
Yeah. I was. It was so weird. It still is. It's like it's nakeder than naked.
Yeah.
You know, anyway, it's fine.
Talk about pornographic.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not mad, though. I think it's interesting and strange and beautiful,
and I
sure like doing it.
Of course. Well, good.
I know. Can you imagine if I didn't like it?
Can you imagine the day your arabesque goes away?
I mean, it sort of never was
okay,
there.
Okay.
Arabesque was never my strong
suit. Pour de bras.
That I've got.
Yeah, okay.
Arms for days.
Good. Keep them. Keep moving them.
All right. So
yes.
What is the next thing you really are desperate to do that you haven't done yet?
La, la, la,
besides, you know, like,
la,
go to McDonald's
la,
or something.
La, 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 la.
Dance-wise.
I don't frequent McDonald's, even dance-wise. Oh, dance-wise?
Yeah.
I'm not the sort of Maoist who does everything by a 5-year plan. I plan ahead, of course, because, you know, people think that I'm either funny or offensive or insulting or darling or entertaining or boring or an egomaniac. And, you know, I am frank and I always have been. So I try not to lie.
Mm-hmm.
So when I say something like that was a big piece of shit and people say like, oh, why don't you tell us how you really feel? I said, well, I cleaned it up a lot before I said it. I took out all of the offending words before I gave my opinion. So don't think I'm not censoring myself. What was your question? So what am I looking forward to? Oh, that's the thing. I'm always, and this is corny yet true, I love making up dances. So, you know, I rehearse stuff. Of course, I have a big repertory. I'm working on things. My company right now is having the intensive workshop. People from all over come and learn how frustrating it is to dance. And it's great. I teach a little bit there, and, you know, I teach composition and music and rhythm and whatever. I don't teach technique because other people have more patience for
that.
Yeah, for that. I teach company class and I take it. But so I'm working on a dance right now that premieres at Mostly Mozart in August to the Trout Quintet of Schubert, which is very, very well known chamber music, and it's really surprisingly tricky. So I'm immersed in that, which gives me enormous delight. I spend a lot of time alone because I work with a lot of people. I've listened to music recreationally only rarely because I have live music. Every rehearsal, every class at my building has a living musician. We work with no recorded music. I work only with live music on the road, only ever. So I get musicked out at work and I don't want to hear it. I'm a very good cook. I'm a good friend to a few people. I don't have a big social world
impossible.
Yeah, exactly. I go to shows. I'm shocked at how many people who don't go to shows in New York, who live in New York and don't go see stuff. Mm-hmm. It's like, what the hell is the matter with
you? So what's your favorite thing you've seen in the last month?
The Worcester Group.
What is that? I know my ignorance is overwhelming. I admit it wholeheartedly.
Dear audience, please ignore that. The Worcester Group is the great, great theater company that's been running in New York in Soho for the last 40 years, maybe. What's one reason I call it, one reason it's the Mark Morris Dance Group is also the Patti Smith Group and the Worcester Group, because it's sort of a collaborative. Mm-hmm. The greatest acting, the greatest theater, I think, in the United States. And they just did a beautiful, beautiful piece called A Pink Chair in Place of a Fake Antique. But you really have to go. It's cheap, meaning inexpensive. Mm-hmm. The music, the work is profound, and it's very often in a little theater, the Performing Garage in Soho. I can't speak highly enough of them. They're friends of mine because I love their work so much, and I've been going for 30 years. Mm-hmm. It's astounding. If you think theater's dead, go to the Worcester Group, and it's not dead anymore.
Wonderful. I'm down. Sign me up. How are we doing on time? We've got 6 minutes.
You have rehearsal. I don't have rehearsal today.
If you had to rehearse a classical ballet, which one would it be? If you were the star of the ballet, which one would
it be? If I were the star?
Yeah. Which one would you want to do?
Well, the classical ballet, does that mean the 19th century? Does that mean ballet blanc?
Yeah.
In which case, the men don't do nothing.
Sleeping Beauty, like try a Sleeping Beauty or a Romeo and Juliet.
That's Swan the Lake. Thing. In all recent updates of these pieces, the adaptations, they're adding way too much dancing for men. I'm sorry.
Well, then
Giselle is about Giselle. Swan Lake is about Odette.
I don't care. I want to dance.
I know, which is why they're dropping in all of these solos for men. Men just used to carry women around and do like 30 seconds of jumping, and then they were too exhausted.
I mean, I understand.
And the tights didn't stretch.
No.
Okay. Those are and they dance back. I love watching men, but that's the thing. That's why Balanchine is so great, or was so great. You know, since his death, all of the sense of humor and sexiness has gone from most of the readings of Balanchine's. I worship Balanchine. I worship Ashton more than almost anything. But as far as the Ballet Blanc, as far as Petit Pas, and, you know, I salute Alexei on his sort of reconstructions, his very expensive reconstructions. That's another story. But I'm like the evil Coke bastard shithead brothers. Oh. Yeah, for example. Hooray. Anyhow... There's no such thing as dirty money, really. It's all dirty. Whatever. You do what you can. I beg for money, believe me, all over the place.
Of course.
Anyway, but, you know, it's like, if it's for me, if you're going to just, if you're going to update everything, I'm not speaking specifically about any particular choreographer or director, but if the piece you're doing has problems in it for contemporary politics or whatever, you know, like the Mikado is a big problem for everybody, then don't do it. Mm-hmm. You can't change the fact that it was written at another time. You can't take the N-word out of Huckleberry Finn. You can, but it draws more attention to it. Mm-hmm. You can ban it. You can burn the book, but I'm against that. Mm-hmm. And so I feel that same way. It's like we cut out, you know, the very insensitive right now, I'm an Indian too, from that great Annie Get Your Gun. It's diminished in a way. So it's like, well, make up something else to replace that. Instead of, like, what do we do about how racist Petit Pas was in the third act of, you know, the divertissement in every ballet? It's like, oh, no, this is insensitive to Roma people who used to be called gypsies. You know, it's like everything is very fraught and very sensitive, as it should be, to get over certain humps and restart the culture. Yeah. But the answer isn't to sanitize everything.
It's to make new work.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. Well, I'm going to leave it at that because that is poignant and well said. So thank you so much for coming, and I just adore you and your work, and I hope you're coming back soon. Can you tell us anything? Are you going to work with us again soon?
I have yet to be contacted, let's put it that way.
Well, then I'll give you a call.
You did.
I did.
And
right.
Here I am.
I'll call you again.
And I'm delighted to see you because I adore you.
Well, thank you. And thanks for listening to the Stage Right Side, and we'll be back soon.